I'll be honest with you. This is one of those shows where I don't have the first idea how people are going to join in on this subject. So I'm really curious about that. The math book, Clifford Pickover's book. It's like a coffee table book. I don't know if I've said that enough, but beautifully illustrated, 250 milestones in the history of mathematics. And each one of these pages is fascinating. It's not just the story of the math problem, but also the problem solvers, or in some cases, the problem creators. And we'll get back to that with a couple that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet, including Super Egg, for whatever that's worth. And then wherever you're going to take this conversation about math and all of the patterns you see replicated, could you be one of these math geniuses that didn't end up going down the traditional math path, as it were, but you could end up being a math superstar anyway? Do you have a theorem? Do you have something that you believe is true? You want to run it by a guy who knows them all? Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Math is everywhere, as we discussed throughout the show. The book is The Math Book. And Clifford, I was thinking about this today too. I was watching news coverage of the protests today in Washington, right? There was an anti-Obama healthcare rally in Washington, and there was a guy who was holding up a sign that said, "Nevadans," I guess he's from Nevada, "Nevadans against change." And I thought, just you can't help but change. There's going to be change. Today can't be yesterday, tomorrow will not be today. That we're always changing. That the history is, I was, especially as I was reading your book, we're always evolving and we're always getting new understandings. If we stayed the same, we would almost cease to exist, wouldn't we?
Well, look at technology as one instance of what you're saying. The pace of technology is amazing, and a lot of it's been unpredictable. People didn't know the internet would take off the way it did, and look how what that's influenced our lives.
Well, or look at the calculator too. I love the story about how the original Hewlett-Packard calculator, nobody thought they would sell like even 100 of them or something.
Yeah, the original person who was designing that brought it to the marketing department, and they said, "Well, we don't know about that." But this was around 1972, and Bill Hewlett developed it despite the marketing studies that said there'd be no market. And then look what happened: 100,000 of them sold in the first year.
Yeah, and who, I mean, and it's almost like when you've got something like that, then how many things were created? How many inventions were made because now somebody had the tool by which to invent them, or to cut, down on the number of steps. And suddenly what was an invention which nobody thought had a market ends up being a product which creates new inventions that have markets.
Well, look at the slide rule. That was from the 1600s. And I was just at the generation where they actually taught slide rules in high school, and boom, then the HP 35 calculator came out. We didn't use slide rules again.
Yeah.
But the slide rule for like over 3 centuries was what engineers used to build things like the Empire State Building and the Hoover Dam. So a simple tool that looks like rubbing sticks together built was used for all major structures on Earth for a while.
Well, that's true. BQ is in Irvine, California, on Coast to Coast AM for Clifford Pickover, The Math Book. Go ahead, BQ.
Hey, this is BQ. Hi, Cliff. Hi,
Hi.
Ian. Hi, I was wondering if you knew about Goodman's Groove.
Goodman's what?
Goodman's Groove, the theory about how over time blue may change to green, and like the sun may have changed from yellow to white over the past 30 years. And I'm just wondering.
Okay, Cliff, do you know about that?
It's not ringing any bells, the sun changing from yellow to white. No, I don't know.
I think that's very interesting, though. And it sounds like something that would be in your book, maybe in a sequel book, BQ. Bruce is in North Hollywood on a wild card line on Coast to Coast AM for Cliff Pickover.
Yeah,
Bruce?
hi, Cliff. You might remember when I was a kid, they had these little square puzzles with numbers from 1 to, I believe, 24 with a blank space. And when you'd buy them, they'd be scrambled, and the object was to get them from 1 to 24 and leaving a blank space at the lower right. Do you remember those?
Yes, it's in the book, and the one version I'm thinking of is called the 15 puzzle. It actually has like 15 squares.
Is it 15?
One is removed.
More than that.
It has 15 tiles and one missing. So it was it.
Maybe yours is a different version of that, but
I thought they were all standard. I thought it was like 25 total squares, with one being blank and the others had the numerals from 1 to 24. But I remember when I was a kid, I got one, and the instructions said that it is impossible to do it backwards. In other words, from upper left 1 across to 5, and then 6, 7, 8, and the next line. But it's impossible to do 24 or whatever the highest number is in the upper left and do it backwards. Do you know anything about that?
Well, it sounds very similar to this 15 puzzle. Maybe it's a different number, but it was presented at one point in its evolution with two of the numbers swapped, the 14 and 15. And when that was done, a prize was offered, and the originator of the puzzle knew that it was actually impossible once you swapped the tiles.
Well, what do you mean by that? That confuses me, too, and it actually sort of confused me in the book a little bit, because we're talking about one of the standard kind of kid puzzles, and so you got a missing tile in the lower right-hand corner, and then it's numbered 1 through 15, and when they sold them, the original idea was that they were sold in order except for the last two tiles, which were transposed. So it went, one across all the way down to the bottom, and then the 14 and the 15 were transposed. Is that impossible to solve?
Well, the original one actually was solvable. It had all the tiles. You slide them around, like sliding them around in a little tray of tiles with numbers on them.
Right.
But mathematicians now know that certain starting points, and one is the example we're talking, like if you just popped out the 15 and 14, put them back, that's unsolvable. And so there's like 50% of the positions you could start with are solvable and 50% aren't. It's just the nature of the mathematics. By the way, interesting that Bobby Fischer, the chess superstar, he could solve that thing in less than 30 seconds if it started from any solvable configuration.
Well, that's interesting. I like also in the book, the math book, there's the history of the Rubik's Cube in a very interesting way. Bob is in Round Rock, Texas, first-time caller line on Coast to Coast. Bob?
Hi. About the question my question is about the time travel, traveling faster than time, you age or don't age. Isn't that a bit like dribbling in basketball? You leave behind the pi r squared, you go faster than the essentials?
Someone should write a book on a time-traveling basketball player that is manipulating time so he can beat all the games. But, a lot of this speed effect on time, you really have to be going at high speeds to see a big effect.
I don't know that I quite understand the problem that he's presenting. Do you know what he's getting at on the term, the basketball player dribbling?
No, I don't know exactly what he's talking about.
It does remind me about the super egg. Do you want to explain that real quickly in the book, the math book?
The super egg, isn't that a cool-looking object? It looks somewhat like an egg, but flattened, and it has a sort of spooky stability, the way it stands, and it's used in architecture, and there's lots of statues and commercialized and toys, but it's just a cool-looking shape. There's a nice picture in the book that people can see that's get a feel for what we're talking about.
But what's the point of the super egg? So what?
Well, it's something that took over. A Danish architect, Piet Hein, in about 65, invented that, and it just took off. And then based on that shape, people have actually designed roads and things of that nature. But you're right. It is on the sort of a curiosity in the history of mathematics, the way it took over people's imaginations.
Sandy is in Rockmart, Georgia, on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Cliff Pickover.
Hi. I have a question. You were talking about 23 people in a room having a better than 50% probability of two sharing the same birthday. My question is, if you double that number to 46, does that also double the probability to 100%?
It goes up very fast, I recall, so that even if you're at 50%, you quickly get to very high chance of getting it right. I don't recall the exact numbers, but I report some in the book. Now I remember, 57 or more people in that room, you have a probability of more than 99% of having two with the same birthday.
Okay, so it does pretty much work then. As opposed, I said 46, you're saying 57.
Yeah, it goes up, and there's actually people have studied formulas for, you know, figuring that all out.
Is that a logarithm?
I don't know.
Is that a logarithmic
equation? I have the
equation
in the book. We can see it involves powers and something called factorial.
Okay.
But there's a neat equation for it.
Carol is in San Jose, a wild card line on Coast to Coast for Cliff Pickover, the math book. Carol?
In your book, is there much discussion of double prime or twin prime numbers?
There are a number of things, milestones dealing with primes, because prime numbers are like, I think of them as the atoms of the numbers. You can build other numbers from them. And there are conjectures in there, one's called the Goldbach conjecture from the 1700s, that says any integer you can think of, it can be expressed by the sum of two primes. And it's something that's still open. We're not sure if it's true or not. And it's an example of something that a conjecture could be open for hundreds and hundreds of years. And even though computers are used to search for things, we don't even know the answer yet.
Yeah, I didn't know that when I had heard that the even numbers could be done that way, but I didn't realize all integers.
Yeah, some of the most fascinating problems and open problems in the book deal with prime numbers. My favorite one is called the Riemann hypothesis. It's one of the most famous problems in all of mathematics. It was proposed in the 1800s, and we still don't have the answer. There's all sorts of cash awards for that. And if we ever solve the Riemann hypothesis, which does involve prime numbers, it's said to open up all new avenues of thinking in mathematics.
Well, actually, I thought about that earlier. How many theorems are unsolvable at this point? How many of them are that famous where people really haven't been able to work them out yet?
Well, of course, people are coming up with problems all the time, but the famous ones, there is a guy named Hilbert who in 1900 came up with 23 problems for the whole next century. He thought these were the biggest ones. One is called the Riemann hypothesis, which I just mentioned. That's still unsolved. There's other ones that were. In fact, to give you an idea, 10 of those problems were solved cleanly, and the other are still open. So there are a number of open problems, still famous ones, still waiting to be solved.
Let's get to Simon on the international line on Coast to Coast AM for the math book, Cliff Pickover. Simon?
Yes. When you were talking about the prisoner's dilemma, I don't know if I got the interpretation right, but I was thinking about, when it comes to whether an accident is involved or shooting or any kind of criminal act happens. And then you get people on both sides that they get all worked up, and one side says they did it, and the other side says they didn't. And I remember telling one of my friends that she was getting so worked up about one side, and I said to her, "Well, when you don't really know whose side is right or wrong." Then I said to her, everybody's right and everybody's wrong. So I wonder if that has anything to do with mathematics.
Hmm.
Well, the prisoner's dilemma is dealing with something called zero-sum games and cooperation. So there's lots of ways of analyzing problems in mathematics that involve what you might call game theory, how different parties interact and how they can gain and lose. So it's a big part of mathematics.
Well, it goes back to John Nash, right? Game theory was something which he gets a big piece of for the self-interest of parties involved and to what degree they'll cooperate to get at least part of what they want.
Exactly. He was into game theory, and it dealt with human conflict and bargaining. It had to do with how the players would, you know, strategize to get gain. But game theory is pretty practical because people today are using it to even look at animal populations and how competition actually works.
I've been thinking about game theory in context of healthcare reform. Honestly, I think that there's a big part of why some people are completely against healthcare reform is because they already have theirs. They don't have to cooperate to get healthcare coverage. There's no incentive for them to want to have anything happen to them if it meant somebody else would get covered by healthcare. And I think that's part of where politicians are smart to always think in terms of game theory when they're explaining the need for something. It's like,
yes.
What's in it for me is the way a lot of people just look at everything that comes up. So you got to give them a game theory to get them involved.
Yes, because game theory has to do with the conflict and the bargaining. And I think you're right. When the statistics are trotted out that X percentage of Americans are quite satisfied with their health care, but is that exactly the way you run the country? You probably should care about the others who aren't satisfied, right?
Or even if I am satisfied with my health care, give me a reason why I need to go out of my way or to have part of my pleasure, right? If in case of like using money as pleasure, why should I have some of my income reduced in order that somebody else have a favorable outcome? And that, so you have to explain it to me in terms of that, or, you know, theoretically, I mean, I kind of get the healthcare reform thing, but I could understand why some people don't. And I think the president is sort of up until at least the speech the other night was having a hard time doing it. And I think he could use a little game theory. Chad is in Ontario, Oregon on a wild card line on Coast to Coast for Dr. Cliff Pickover. Chad?
Yeah, I have a theory that everything in the universe is based on a sphere or 3.14, all the way down from cells to gears to wheels to planets and everything that we've ever created that's come out well for humanity. And also I'd like to get his take on Coral Castle.
Coral Castle, of course, being – you know about Coral Castle,
Cliff? Is that
Cliff?
Florida?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I haven't thought about Coral Castle. That's where someone built these structures. Was it from coral or rocks? You know, people wonder how he moved them around.
Right. How did they all fit together so perfectly?
Right. I'm not an expert on Coral Castle, but
yeah, that might be
a math problem.
It's definitely a math problem. It's 100 times a math problem. It's actually very interesting. For that same reason, I would say so are the pyramids and Stonehenge too, you know, and every time you're looking at how it got built or why it got built, you're looking at math. You can't get away from it. Well, that just brings us back to the math book, Clifford Pickover, From Pythagoras to the 57th Dimension. And I said before, I didn't know how the calls were going to go. I should have said, I know how the calls are going to go. They're going to go great. Really interesting questions. Thank you so much so far. We got a half hour to go and I can't wait to see where you're going to go. What is it a particular math problem that you've had that you've been working out in your head? Is it something that you've never quite understood about math and how it pertains to our lives? The math book next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, I'm making the clubhouse turn in the last half hour talking about math. Who knew that we'd have so many interesting comments on the phones? We'll get to that. And also then one or two of the pages that I dog-eared that I never got back to, which I'll try to get in before the top of the hour. Can't recommend this book enough. It's not a math book, but it's definitely a book about math. And you learn so much, and I think it's very inspiring. Who knows what you will create after you read the math book and listen for Cliff Pickover next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Cliff Pickover, here's two more examples of how when you think about patterns and you think about probabilities, you think about math, but you don't always think about it in terms of math. Here's two things to contemplate. Maybe you can decide what mathematician or math principle might be best applied here. You ready? The first is, I was reading a story about how a major Andy Warhol art collection was stolen in Los Angeles, which led to a story that, as I was reading this one about the stolen art collection of Andy Warhol, about the computer systems that they have around the world to track art so that you know which piece. It provides sort of a computer provenance, right, of the history of a piece of art. Andy Warhol's collection was one of the first to be cataloged by this computer program called Art Systems. And then just as I'm reading the story, I see that the Art Systems software was created by a kid I had in my Sunday school class. It's like, what are the odds? Yeah. And then how about this? In terms of number freaks, the Dow Jones for September 11th, 2009. Did you see this? The Dow Jones number was 9605. That's the exact same number that it was September 11th, 2001.
Wow.
So who
coincidence?
Is that a coincidence, or
we'll have to get out the statisticians.
Where does that fall in the math book? That's what I want to know, is which mathematician would have been most interested in the Dow Jones having the same number on the same date, but 9 years apart.
Yeah, there's a lot of probability guys in the math book that would probably be interested. And for your Andy Warhol art, you're thinking of probability, but a lot of mathematicians have tried to get signatures for art, like Jackson Pollock paintings, to see years later, well, is this a real Pollock, or is it fake? And they've used the concept of fractals and related mathematics to at least think about that.
Well, and then I just did the math wrong, too, only 8 years ago. Let's go. We've got a bunch of people hanging on. Let's pick them up. Jimmy is in Syracuse on Coast to Coast AM for Cliff Pickover. Jimmy?
Hi, Ian. First, I'd like to make a comment, and then I have a question about Kurt Gödel, the mathematician.
Okay.
My comment is about the birthday problem. It is possible on a regular year to put 365 people in a very large room, and no two of them would have the same birthday. And on a leap year, you can put 366 people in the same room without them. And you can make it so that no two of them have the same birthday. So in order for the probability to become 100%, which is a certainty, you'd have to have either 366 people or 367 people in a league.
All right, hold on. Cliff, respond to that.
No, he makes a good point. The probability becomes 100% if there's at least 366 people in the room. And some of the mathematics people have looked at, they didn't really worry about, you know, leap years and things like that. But you're right. There are all sorts of twists you could add to the birthday paradox in getting it perfect.
But I want to go back to that then. So you said earlier, so with 23 people in a room at random, there's a 50% chance that two of them are going to be born on the same day, correct?
Right, assuming 365 days a year.
Right. Okay, now that probability goes up to 90% if there are 57 people in the room.
Actually, 99%. It really gets high fast.
Okay, so it's 99% at 57. So the difference between 57 and 365 is just 1% of certainty.
Right. It's going up. You can see the way it's progressing. It is interesting.
But did I get that right? That if it's 99% at 57, then from 57 to 365, you only increase that 1% of certainty.
Right, you're getting just a hair more. You've already gotten most of the way rather quickly. Yes,
okay.
You're right.
Very good.
You get high fast.
Jimmy, what was your other question?
Oh, thank you. That was a great explanation. Each extra person that you add just puts a little bit more on the total probability. Well, my question about Professor Gödel was he was very shy. He didn't like to meet with people, and he taught at the University of Princeton. So if one of his students wanted to meet with him, they would make an appointment, but Professor Gödel would make the appointment but never show up because he figured that was the best way that he could guarantee not to meet with the person. And that was his, like, MO, his method of operation in his daily routine. But now my question comes to this. If there are two Kurt Gödels in the same universe, this is what would happen. They would both make the appointment. Neither one would show up. And then they might accidentally meet at Starbucks. Now, Ian, could you imagine the conversation?
Hey, let me tell you something interesting about Kurt Gödel. He actually starved to death. He was such a hypochondriac and had a kind of sort of a strange brain, especially later in life, that he actually thought people were trying to poison him, and actually he starved. But during his good years, he was actually a friend of Einstein. I have a photo of him with Einstein.
Yeah, I like that photograph, although Einstein's not really looking at him. but doesn't that go back to my theory before about the unpredictability of these brilliant brains too? I mean, it's just in order to come up with something like that, you have to there's like a trade-off that these minds make. They trade off in order to get to that brilliant place. You trade off something else, and it's often fatal like that, or it's often life, you know, compromising in some major way, which leads me to another interesting question. If it meant giving up so much of your life, the happiness of your life, but you could create some, you know, amazing theorem that would make you immortal, like somebody in your own book, would you be willing to make that trade-off?
You know, I guess it depends how much happiness we have to sacrifice. You know, it all would depend.
Okay, let's say I'll reduce it to a simple: you die alone. That you die alone. Would you be? But you could have created some amazing thing. But at your deathbed, there's nobody there to mourn you. You've disintegrated all of your relationships. Would it be worth it?
I think, you know, one measure of immortality is leaving a mark upon the world. And, you know, maybe that's why writers like to write. They like to connect with people and leave some kind of mark. I think I would like to leave a mark on the world. But if you told me I had to be lonely for the rest of my life, that would be a different story.
West of the Rockies, Don is in Salem, Oregon on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Cliff Pickover. Don?
Good morning, gentlemen. Cliff, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever seen the movie Sound of Thunder?
Is this based on the Ray Bradbury novel?
Exactly. Yeah, the short novel.
Yeah, this is chaos theory in action, yes.
Yeah, where the time waves come in. And it's been like a year ago I got to talk to George and Dr. Michio Kaku about this.
I believe this is the story where people go back in time and they accidentally crush a butterfly, and that changes all of history.
You got it, bud. And yeah. I'm wondering mathematically, do you think time travel is possible? And I'll let you guys talk about it, and I'll listen, and I'll get off the air and let somebody else in.
We did talk about it earlier too. So if you get a chance to go back and stream link, go back in time and listen to it. But Cliff, did you have another thought on time travel?
Well, the physics so far does not seem to prohibit time travel. This caller looks like he's interested in paradoxes. You know, going back in time and maybe killing your grandma and you're never born. How could that happen? And one theory of time travel is that if it were possible and you went back, you'd actually create a parallel universe, so we sort of diverge at that point, and the rest of history would be different in this parallel universe.
Well, there's a great Simpsons episode where Homer Simpson goes back to prehistoric time, and he's careful not to crush anything, or you know, but I think he sneezes.
I saw that he sneezes, and you see the cascade of dinosaurs all dying.
Yeah, they're just all around him, and then the rise of these giant mammals or whatever it was. Hey, Jordan is in Palms, California, on Coast to Coast. Jordan?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
That's funny. I read that Sound of Thunder story, and I don't know. Anyway, so you guys were talking about Bobby Fischer for a minute back there, right?
Right.
I read this book all about the history of chess, and it's very fascinating, the different uses it was given, and also that a lot of these grandmasters who are extremely good in mathematics and so forth, who could kind of like see the matrix, and that's the way I describe people who are good at math. They can see patterns and they can see things. But unfortunately, like you were mentioning before, a lot of these guys ended up becoming schizophrenic, actually, and were afraid of people after them all the time, and would get extremely depressive if they lost chess matches, and some of them committed suicide in strange ways, actually.
And, well, I wonder. I would actually argue the inverse of that. Is I wonder whether because they were, you know, maybe schizophrenic or manic depressive, or because they, that's why they were good at chess. That it wasn't
give something up.
Yeah, it's that one doesn't. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just my own theory, but interesting thought. Go ahead, Cliff.
Well, you would think someone like the best chess player in the world would have something very special about their brains. We know Bobby Fischer was quite a strange person, especially later in life.
Yeah.
But, you know, interesting, now computers can beat the best chess players, but they can't beat the best Go players. Go is a game I talk about from ancient China and Japan. We still can't get a computer to beat the best Go players in the world.
Hmm. Wolf is in Antelope Valley, California. First-time caller line for Cliff Pickover. Wolf?
Hi, Ian. Great to talk to you. I love your show. I listen
Thank
to you,
you
every week.
Appreciate
I got a question for you regarding the speed of light and time travel, and then I just have another question that's a little off topic. Maybe I'm just naive or I don't. I've kind of read about it, and I'm trying to wrap my head around it, but it seems like there's a basic point that seems to be ignored. I understand you travel away at the speed of light, and time is perceived or physically slows down. But is that it's because we're kind of moving away from the experience that we existed at? Like, for instance, if you're looking at a star, you're seeing the light from, like, 20 light years away. That happened 20 years ago. So if you rush towards it and it took you 20 years to get there at speed of light, you'd be there 40 years, so to speak. Now, if you turn around and come back, the experience that you traveled away at the speed of light, you'd be then approaching at an accelerated rate. And so you wouldn't be coming back younger to a future. Because as you approach again to the center of the experience you left, you'd basically be going through it at a faster rate because the speed of light is now approaching you from that experience.
It doesn't actually work quite that way. It's a process called time dilation, where actually when you're moving at high speed and come back, you will have aged less, and your twin on the Earth could be dead for thousands of years. It really does seem to work that way.
But do you see what I'm saying, though? Is it because we actually are a center of experience and that all other experiences or all other consciousnesses radiate out at the speed of light? As we approach them, we accelerate towards them and decelerate from the one we leave. If we turn around and come back, we're just accelerating back into the one that's already been emanating from its center. And it just seems kind of obvious that all centers would maintain their own continuity, and we'd be going back and forth, which would seem to us like we're aging or not aging, but we would accelerate in age upon returning.
I don't think it's a consciousness thing. There's actually a formula that says exactly how this works. And in fact, as you're traveling close to the speed of light, your length actually contracts, called length dilation or length contraction. Nothing to do with the human mind, as far as I'm thinking. I think it comes right out of these simple math formulas.
I appreciate that, Wolf, and I'm sorry, time-wise here, I got to get a couple other people on who've been waiting for so long before the top of the hour. I know you had one other comment you wanted to make, but Cassie is in Conroe, Texas on Coast to Coast AM. Cassie?
Hi, Ian. Hi, Clifford. My question is, I have numbers this has been over a number of that at times seem to appear to me more than what would happen if it was just coincidence. You know, like I'll
like the 11-11 thing.
Well, mine is a 27 thing.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with the 11-11 thing.
That's okay. Go ahead. So you just recurring number. You see 27s all the time.
Yeah, I'll go in the store and I'll come out of the store, and right by the car door on the ground is a piece of paper with the number 27 on it. Or I'll be randomly picking a TV show and the hotel room is number 27, and then it'll stop. It happens real, you know, a lot, and then it'll stop, and then it'll start up again. I'll keep seeing these particular numbers. 27 and 7 and 11 and 3. And it'll go periodically, different numbers will appear more than what it seems like would be happening if it was just a coincidence. And I was wondering, is there some sort of mathematical explanation for this? Is it a communication from the other side?
All right. Cliff, what do you think?
Well, I think what would be neat to do is an experiment where you actually jot down, and this would be hard, but every number you encounter, because your mind might be tuned. Oh, I'm going to see 27. And the next time you see it, oh, look, I saw it. Or perhaps in between you also saw a 12 and a 15. So if you actually noted down the numbers, every number you saw, then we could probably make a more clear statement if it's something, you know, more wild, or you're just happening to notice the ones you're keying on.
Yeah, it is. I wonder whether certain numbers recur, though, at a higher frequency in the day-to-day commerce.
Yeah, you know, well, actually, there's something in the book that I don't know if you remember. It's called Benford's Law.
Yeah. That's actually one I was trying to think of.
And that's cool. It's in stocks and in the sizes of lakes and all sorts of things, where the leftmost digit is much more often a one than you would think by chance.
So, I use that theory when I'm watching The Price is Right, and you have to guess the last couple of digits of something. I'm dead serious. I think there are certain numbers that just come up more often. Even though theoretically they should all be equal, I don't think they do.
Well, look up Benford. The people, radio people, can look up Benford's Law in the book, and they'll see something kind of strange there.
I think so. Annie is in Alabama. That was one of my dog-eared pages. Annie's in Alabama on Coast to Coast AM. Been hanging on a while, Annie. Thank you.
Thank you, Clifford. Have you ever heard of a watchdog timer theory for planned obsolescence of a product containing electric circuit? It uses a bell curve, and it mimics random distribution. 90% of them stop running soon after the warranty runs out. However, about 10% don't have this extra watchdog timer, and these are the ones that the manufacturer likes to mentioned that have run for many, many years, and it's a distribution, and they don't all stop running the same day. Have you ever heard of this to make people buy a new one?
I don't know too much about this watchdog timer, but the general idea of looking at statistics and figuring out product quality is one mathematicians and engineers think about. And the idea of random numbers and randomizing machines, I have a lot of entries on that in the book, because producing random numbers is very important in science and math.
That is an intriguing idea, that if you made all products equal, they should all end reasonably at the same time. They should all break down at the same time within, you know, if the wear and tear were the same. Right. I mean,
right. But there might be some bell curve distribution that says, well, some
right.
just by chance will be better or worse.
I think we have time real quickly. If Bill can be super quick, Bill, I mean, literally like 10 seconds. Go ahead.
Hi, hey, first time caller. Love the show. I had just a real easy question. Can Fibonacci numbers be described by an equation, or is that a pattern that?
Oh, good. The Fibonacci numbers from the Da Vinci Code. Cliff?
Yep. Fibonacci numbers seem to have a lot to say about nature. It's a progression of numbers. They get bigger and bigger and bigger. There are certain formulas used to produce them. But hard to say in a limited amount of time.
I'm sorry I strangled so many people. Speaking of numbers, just looking up on the clock. And sorry, Brenda and others who've been waiting for a while to get to talk with Dr. Cliff Pickover. Thank you so much for giving us a great show. And I really hope people pick up this book. It's a coffee table quality book, but not at a coffee table price. And you'll learn it and love it. And Deus te mat. We'll see you tomorrow night for The Ghosts of the Upper Midwest. You're going to love this book. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett.